You are listening to Radio Aryan for an alternative to the anti-white system. On RadioAryan.com.
I think they're getting out of hand. Well, you know what happened to those who complain. We've got to stop them seeing light. Let them think it's all right, 'cause the fireworks aren't to keep them entertained. Well, the wells have not run dry. Do we really need to lie? We'll say it's a national emergency. We're set a wedding full of clowns, and we'll kick them while they're down. Get the banks control, 'cause they are to me. Let's go and find a better place. We'll call it New America. Won't it be a lovely place to be? Imperial material, the mind of New America, the best idea since democracy.
Hello and welcome once again, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and children of all ages, to the Roper Report, Billy's Balkanization Podcast, brought to you live through RadioAryan.com, through this recording in beautiful, scenic, downtown, crime-free Northern Arkansas here in the Ozarks. We're bringing you, for the last week of November, our pre-Halloween special. And this pre-Halloween special goes out especially for those of you who live in more diverse parts of the country and the world, where you have too many spooks in your neighborhood for Halloween. So, if you want to get rid of some of those spooks, we encourage you to follow the Shieldwall Network's program, which you can read about at shieldwallnetwork.wordpress.com, or email me through roper_billy@yahoo.com, where you can also make a generous non-tax-deductible contribution through PayPal to help join the numbers 14 and 88 and the letters H and X in sponsoring the Roper Report podcast. On this week's show, we have a lot to talk about, so let's get started. We really want to bring you the news and reports from the field about the White Lives Matter demonstration in Shelbyville, Tennessee, this last weekend, and talk to you about Jacob Goodwin's case. But that's not all that's going on. For those of you who are experiencing these colder, late fall and early winter temperatures, remember that next week is the daylight savings time ending fall back time, when you actually have to set your clocks back 1 hour in order to get back in tune with the Jews. Also, for those of you who are getting a little bit cold as the temperatures plummet, it's a great time to cool up with a hot book. And on Amazon.com right now, they have a free shipping special for the Haste in the Day trilogy. The Haste in the Day trilogy contains the original Haste in the Day, as well as Waiting for the Sun and Wasting the Dawn, the second and third sequels to Hasten the Day, which is my fictional, science fictional actually, prognostication and prophecy of the coming Balkanization of America. Now, the first in that installment, the Hasten the Day trilogy, called Hasten the Day, is written 1 year after the racial civil war and economic collapse, which leads to the Balkanization of America. The second installment, Waiting for the Sun, is about 5 years after the initial breakup of the United States of America. And the third, the Wasting the Dawn book, is written about 10 years after the breakup of the United States of America through racial civil war and Balkanization. But the three volumes together have been collected in a compendium anthology called the Haste of the Day Trilogy, and it's available now through Amazon.com as well as through Barnes & Noble and Books A Million. And if you don't like to give to mainstream commercial book retailers online, then you can actually go to Lulu.com and buy a copy of the Haste in the Day trilogy there. It's a little bit more expensive there, but you don't have to give any of your profits to Amazon. But if you don't mind buying from Amazon, then free shipping is now available there for the Haste in the Day trilogy. For those of you who are looking for something to read over the winter months to keep you up to date on what is coming to America. Now, this is a fictional book, but many people have considered it to be prophetic, and coupled with the nonfiction, the Balk, B-A-L-K book, actually paints a pretty detailed and decisive outline of what all of us can expect. So you'll know which side of the line you're on when America goes down.
Working class. Open borders destroys our ability to organize. Mass immigration destroys our ability as workers to organize. You are doing the jobs of the bosses. You are scabs in this class war. This is not just a racial conflict. This is a fight for basic human dignity. You have betrayed your community. Your family. But I ask you this. You don't have to be on that side of the barricade if you want to fight for justice. If you want to fight for peace. Our world is one where unelected bureaucrats and multinational corporations are not to make our laws. The community makes the laws. Self-determination means liberation for whites, for blacks, for people around the world. What we want is a home. A home for our people, for your people, and for us to find solutions together. I see there are Black Lives Matter supporters. And to Black Lives Matter I say, you deserve your own police. You deserve your own community. You deserve your own businesses and lawmakers. Because integration doesn't work. Multiculturalism doesn't work. And the way to be able to get what your community needs isn't to fight us. The white community is suffering too. It's to work together to say that America has failed. We didn't leave America. America left us. This empire uses our bodies. We're here in the volunteer state. How many Tennesseans have given life and limb for the country that spits on them every day and is working to ensure that their children end up as a hated and despised minority, as slaves to multinational corporations and banks?
Now, talking about the demonstrations this last weekend in Shelbyville, Tennessee, it was a resounding success. There has been some debate afterwards about the optics involved and some of the planning and the tactical coordination which occurred. But frankly, if you've never participated in a march, in a rally, in a demonstration or protest, if you've never fought in the streets for our people, if you've never actually shed your blood and the blood of our enemies on the streets, then really, you should sit down and shut up and leave it to people who have and people who are willing to, because they're the ones who really matter. The only people who are really fussing and kvetching and griping and bitching about the White Lives Matter rally and their optics are people who really don't deserve our attention or our respect or any of our time to listen to what their opinions are, because frankly, I don't think their opinions matter. The two most publicly known people who are complaining about the optics in Shelbyville at the White Lives Matter demonstration are, well, one of the guys was, less than honorably discharged from the military because he robbed a cab driver at gunpoint. And he's actually kind of vertically challenged. And, come to think of it, they both are. But this first guy, is famous for having a Mexican ex-fiance, and he's retired. He's turned over his position in the movement, such as it was, to another fascist haircut. So why anyone even cares what he has to say anymore or not is beyond me. The second guy that's complaining about the optics of the White Lives Matter rally in Shelbyville is, as I alluded to, another vertically challenged punk who is famous for being a race mixer and a race traitor, who's an American expatriate apparently, who has, as far as I know, never attended a public rally or demonstration in his life, is unlikely to, probably because he couldn't see over anybody else's shoulders. And he is the guy who you might know of as promoting sport banging of non-white women and constantly attacks and denigrates white women. He, ironically, made his name by using openly national socialist imagery on his website, and now is promoting the use of nothing other than American flags and an American nationalist approach to these demonstrations and rallies. So suddenly he's flipped the script and is the know-all, be-all, do-all of everything Filipina. But neither of these guys are worth our time or our attention. Shelbyville and the White Lives Matter demonstration in Middle Tennessee was a huge success in a number of different ways. One of the ways it was a success is that over $1,800 was collected in cash in a fundraiser to benefit Jacob Goodwin, the political prisoner being held here in Lone Oak County, Arkansas, awaiting, unfortunately, extradition to Virginia to stand trial for a warrant out of Charlottesville. Jacob's parents gave a speech at the meeting following the lunch that was held after the Shelbyville demonstration this Saturday, and after their speech, which was a very emotional and encouraging and uplifting speech by both of them, that collection was taken. The bucket was passed, so to speak, and $1,800 was raised, which is wonderful and will be a great step forward in helping to finance the lawyers that'll be necessary to fight the legal battles in Jacob Goodwin's legal defense when he faces trial in a couple of months in Charlottesville. Right now, he's being held in Lone Oak County, Arkansas. And if you would like to send a letter to Jacob Goodwin before he is extradited to Virginia, just to give him a little encouragement, you can do so by writing to Jacob Goodwin, courtesy of the Lone Oak County Jail, 440 D.D. Lane, Lone Oak, Arkansas, 72086. And I'll spell that for you. His last name is Goodwin, G-O-O-D-W-I-N, and Jacob can be reached at the Lone Oak County Jail. Lone Oak is L-O-N-O-K-E, all one word, County Jail, 440 D-D Lane, that's D-E-E, D-E-E Lane, Lone Oak, Arkansas, 72086. And if you'd like to, you can also actually email Jacob Goodwin by going to smartjailmail.com. That's smartjailmail.com altogether. And you'll have to register there to send an email to Jacob Goodwin. Select his name after you select Lone Oak County Jail, and he'll be able to respond to you through his email. If you do email Jacob Goodwin through the smartjailmail.com website, it costs you about 50 cents per email, which is actually not much more than a letter and envelope. But we also encourage you to avoid that step and to avoid him having to pay for the reply, which also cost him, by sending an extra, the e-edition of a self-addressed stamped envelope, if you will, an extra credit to Jacob through email, through smartjailmail.com, if you do email him so that he can respond in kind without it costing him anything. So thank you for that consideration. When you write to or email Jacob Goodwin at the Lone Oak County Jail. Now, I don't want to go too deeply into the negative criticisms of the Shelbyville White Lives Matter demonstration because, as I said, you know, they were made by people who literally see this as a class war where they are trying to reach upper middle class preppy elites. And these are the people who never have participated in a revolution or in any making any historical change, so they're not going to be affected by our optics one way or another. Now, they're going to just grab onto the coattails and jump onto the ship that is winning when that ship inevitably begins to win. So, as the tides turn, and as those ships start to come in, these people will be just as happy to do what we tell them to do as now they're happy to follow along and be politically correct and do what our enemies tell them to do. But before that tide is fully turned, these ships, if you will, to continue the analogy, will go with the prevailing tide. We can't expect to have them rowing along with us. What we can expect is to have the disenchanted, perhaps those who are least successful in the current status quo and who are most disgruntled with it, to join us first. And those are the people with whom we need to have common ground. I personally think that the optics I saw at the White Lives Matter rally in Middle Tennessee perfectly appealed to the white male population of Middle Tennessee. So one of the major goals that was successfully reached through the White Lives Matter rally in Shelbyville was raising a tremendous amount of funds to help out with Jacob Goodwin's legal defense. $1,800 is no small chunk of change for the movement. Now, I could say, very legitimately, that if you are a multimillionaire, and I think that everyone knows that there are some people in the white nationalist or in the alt-right movement who are millionaires. Their mothers own lots and lots of cotton land in the South. And through this cotton land in the South, they are millionaires, multimillionaires themselves. So they have lots of money to travel around and pay $10,000 to rent an auditorium on a college campus for a couple of hours, give a speech for their own self-aggrandizement. They have plenty of money to hire lawyers to fight legal battles to protect their own rights to exercise the First Amendment whenever they would like to, regardless of what it costs the rest of us. And they have plenty of money to travel all over the country and indeed all over the world, jet-setting around in style and getting lots of media coverage because they can pay for these large auditoriums and conference rooms and throw big parties. But strangely enough, when someone goes to a rally or a protest that they themselves were responsible for planning and promoting, and something happens and those protest attendees who went there at their behest get arrested and are held in jail facing serious charges, and their families are not able to afford the legal fees to purchase the attention of attorneys for them, those millionaires are nowhere to be found. I don't see those millionaires donating big checks to Jacob Goodwin's legal defense. I don't see those millionaires helping any of the political prisoners who are currently sitting in jail awaiting charges after Charlottesville. As a matter of fact, I haven't seen a single red cent from those millionaires going to help Jacob Goodwin or his family or any of the others. So, if I had a wish, I would wish that rather than a greasy KFC chicken bucket having to be passed around at a state park pavilion where hardworking, blue-collar white guys in their 20s have to fork over their own gas money and their rent for the next month to try to help out Jacob Goodwin and his parents and other incarcerated political prisoners, I would rather that maybe the multimillionaires take some responsibility for their own actions, which led to certain protests and rallies, which then, in turn, led to some of these guys being arrested and held in jail. So, obviously, I'm not going to call any names. That would be inappropriate and disrespectful. So, out of full respect and in complete appropriate tone, I would suggest that we hold those millionaires in the alt-right accountable to take care of their own. I was not in Charlottesville, but I have, if I may say so in all modesty, done everything in my power to help Jacob Goodwin and his family by helping to raise legal funds for their attorneys and for promoting his case and his cause. And I will continue to do so because he is my friend. And because even though I was not in Charlottesville and frankly did not approve of Charlottesville, did not endorse Charlottesville, he is a member of my organization, the Shieldwall Network. And so I have a personal responsibility to stand up beside Jacob Goodwin. And I also support the others who have been incarcerated after Charlottesville who are not members of my organization, the Shieldwall Network, just as much. I'm focusing on Jacob because he's my personal friend and he is from my state, Arkansas, and also because he is a member of the Shieldwall Network. So he is my first priority. But I have not seen much, if any, help coming from the multimillionaires who were responsible for promoting and planning and sponsoring Charlottesville. I wish that we would see more support from them, so that perhaps rather than flitting around from one college campus to another, they could actually be emptying out some of their deep pockets to help our political prisoners who are being held in jail. So that raising of funds for Jacob Goodwin and his family was one of the successful points of Shelbyville and the White Lives Matter rally. Another success was that after Charlottesville, a page needed to be turned. It needed to be shown that the white nationalist community could hold a large public protest peacefully without any of our people being arrested or without any violence. So, by that measure, Shelbyville and the White Lives Matter demonstration was also a great success.
There's no point in talking to these people. They're not going to listen to us. They don't care. These people have been incited by propaganda, anti-white propaganda from cradle to grave. Cradle to, you know, I guess they look like they're near the grave. These people have been incited by the system from a young age to hate white people. And if they're white, hate themselves. It's what our school system does. It's what the intellectual establishment in the universities do. And it's what the media does. They tell us white people are evil. White people are, we've genocided the world. We've colonized the world. We've killed people around the world. Everything that we've done is told we're supposed to be ashamed of it. We're supposed to be ashamed of it. And now we have this thing that we talk about. There's this conspiracy theory. I like to call it a conspiracy theory. They call it white privilege. It means that there's something inborn in white people that just makes them do evil things and favor only our kind and oppress other people, but that's just a bunch of bullshit. We built this country for ourselves. Europe is for whites. America is for whites. That's why these countries exist. And we're not going to take any more of your conspiracy theories, white privilege, which means we, white people, have to give up everything that we ever built, everything we ever did, everything we ever made, for people of color and immigrants around the world. Those people all have their own countries. We only have this one. This is our country. And we are not going to give it up. We should not be forced to give it up because a global elite, an elite clique of cosmopolitans wants us to give up our country so they can cut wages, so they can turn all of us into atomized consumers, so they can sell us OxyContin, so they can sell us pharmaceuticals while we sit and watch Netflix and feed our cats alone in our empty apartments in the middle of a deracinated and destroyed hellscape of urbanism. That's what they want for us, because that way they make money. They don't care about communities. They don't care about religion. They don't care about family. They don't care about any of that. They don't care about wholesome communities that are cohesive and bound together with ties of blood, of nation, ethnicity, and religion. They don't care about that. They want to destroy all that. That's what multiculturalism is about. Diversity is a word for genocide. We talk about white genocide, but ultimately every people and every culture will be destroyed as the global elite blend us into one, you know, homogenous soup of people with no culture, no race, no religion, no nothing. Nothing to it. That is what the global elite want to do, because it's easier to sell us stuff that way. And they can just sell us their products and we'll just waste away as consumers, mindless, atomized consumers. That's what they want. And we're not going to stand for it. White lives matter because no one's allowed to say that anymore. As Sango said, we are told white lives don't matter. There's a whole intellectual establishment out there that is meant to tell you that. We're supposed to be replaced, but it's not going to happen.
Deutschland, die Heil! Deutschland, die Heil! Deutschland, die Heil! Deutschland, die Heil! Deutschland, die Heil!
The Shelbyville protesters that came out against the white nationalist barely, if at all, outnumbered them. They were as far as optics, a sordid looking bunch. Their optics were far worse than our side was. The optics on the pro-white side were very disciplined, and I thought very appropriate for Middle Tennessee, as I mentioned. The numbers were satisfactory. It was almost even. And certainly had the police not been there to protect the Antifa and Black Lives Matter and the white cucks, then they would have had their plate lunch handed to them. We all know that. So Shelbyville was a success in that it turned the corner on Charlottesville and showed that we could hold a large public demonstration without violence or without mass arrest. That is why the Murfreesboro part of the White Lives Matter demonstration was canceled, because it became clear through leaked information from certain sources inside the city and county governments that the mayor of Murfreesboro and the police had really conspired to create another Charlottesville-type situation by opening up the public square and allowing a melee to occur, and then their plan was to make mass arrests. So, after some coordination, both on the ground and through long distance that I was able to participate in, everyone that was going to Murfreesboro was advised that that aspect of the White Lives Matter rally had been canceled, and that trap that had been set by the corrupt, cucked local public officials was definitely sidestepped. So, by that measure, the White Lives Matter demonstration was certainly a success as well. It was also a success in that different organizations, eight different organizations, including the Shielwall Network, worked together without a great deal of rancor or disagreement. But most importantly, the purpose for the White Lives Matter demonstration was to bring attention on two issues. The first issue was the dumping of 15,000 Somalians and other non-white Africans into Middle Tennessee purposefully for the express intent and purpose of demographic change by the federal government. So these literally tens of thousands of Somalians and non-white African immigrants have been dumped into Middle Tennessee, one of the widest areas of our nation, had a direct effect locally. And one of those effects was that one of those immigrants went into a church, a white church, in Antioch, Tennessee, not far from Shelbyville, and proceeded to shoot seven of those churchgoers. He said that he was doing that in direct response to Dylann Roof's church shooting in South Carolina, and he was a Black Lives Matter, Black National supporter. So this racist Black who walked into a white church in Central Tennessee, not far from Shelbyville, opened fire, shooting seven people, and there's almost zero media coverage? Really? Are you effing kidding me? Imagine if the roles had been reversed. Imagine if another white guy had walked into a Black church and opened fire again. It would have been like Dylann Roof all over again. And don't get me wrong, I'm not being overly critical of Dylann Roof. I write to Dylann Roof and I have sympathy for his case and his situation. It's the really mentally ill, psychologically corrupted society that he grew up in as a young white man, which led to what happened with Dylann Roof. So I'm not placing the onus on him. But imagine, if you will, had something like that happened again, the media would still be talking about it. Instead, because it was a Black African immigrant who did that in a white church in Antioch, Tennessee, there's almost no media coverage. So the most important purpose for the White Lives Matter rally in Shelbyville, Tennessee, was to draw attention to the dumping of tens of thousands of non-white refugee immigrants into Central Tennessee, as well as the specific result of that, the shooting of the white congregation members in Antioch, Tennessee. So by that measure, and by really every measure possible, objectively, the White Lives Matter demonstration this last weekend in Central Tennessee was a success. So I want to thank everyone who attended. I applaud your bravery and your courage and your ability to work together to raise $1,800 for Jacob Goodwin's legal defense, to stand together, eight organizations, in solidarity, and to bring attention to the dumping of tens of thousands of non-white refugee immigrants into Central Tennessee and the Antioch church shooting, which the Jewish-controlled media had done its best to ignore. The White Lives Matter hashtag was trending all day Saturday on Twitter because of your noble efforts. So certainly, you deserve the respect and admiration of everyone. Now, the Shield Wall Network Phalanx, of course, contributed to and was present at the White Lives Matter demonstration. And you can read a lengthy, very detailed, and often humorous report by the Shield Wall Network Tennessee contact, Derek Gooden, which he published this morning on the Roper Report website, which is the Roper Report site. WordPress.com. And by the time this podcast is broadcast on RadioArian.com, you'll also be able to read Derek Gooden's After Action Report on the White Lives Matter rally on WhiteNationalist.net, as well as ArianWarrior.com. The Shield Wall Network website, which is ShieldWallNetwork.WordPress.com, will also be having a reblogging of Derek Gooden's Shield Wall Network After Action Report on the White Lives Matter rally. I'll leave it to you to read that very funny and inspired piece of literature by Derek Gooden. Also present at the White Lives Matter rally were Shield Wall Network members from Missouri and Arkansas who drove over together to stand beside the Nationalist Front, Traditionalist Worker Party, the League of the South, and the National Socialist Movement, as well as other organizations. Now, a lot of people are talking about the potentiality of outside events affecting our internal politics. So let me turn just for a moment away from the White Lives Matter demonstration and discuss one of the potentialities for a crisis trigger scenario that could create the vacuum of power at the federal level, or at least a weakening of federal power in the United States that could make possible the balkanization of America and the rise of ethnostates. Now, in the Haste in the Day trilogy, I wrote about a number of factors coming into play to create the perfect storm that made possible the breakup of the United States of America. I talked about economic collapse due to hyperinflation. I talked about the credit bubble bursting, exacerbating the stock market crash that came from that. I talked about uncontrolled immigration and the rise of sanctuary states leading to an abdication of power by the federal government, which literally decided not to force their hand, not to exercise their legitimate constitutional authority, and therefore encouraging black nationalists to try to create their own autonomous regions, their own independent racial homelands within the United States as well. And then I talked about the devastating impact on our military of mutinies and desertions as a quiet civil war began to build up from the grassroots and community levels, combined with riots and protest in the major cities. Now, today, we're looking at potentially November the 4th, riots and protest in a lot of major cities, from Philadelphia and Chicago all the way to Seattle. I think there are 14 major U.S. cities right now that are going to face, according to the Revolutionary Communist and the Antifa and the Black Lives Matter that are promoting this, major protest on November the 4th. And that will be just next week. I wish I could be more optimistic and say that I expect the balkanization of America to happen next week because of these protests creating a civil war. I don't think that right now there is enough momentum behind the left to carry their protests and rallies beyond just the confines of these cities. I think that they probably will have some civil unrest, some riots, maybe some arson and some looting, but I don't think it will really create the coup d'etat to remove Trump and Pence from power that they want it to, nor do I believe that we'll create an actual civil war. Civil wars and revolutions always happen in hot weather, when people are more agitated, not during the winter. So that's going to cut down some. I know they're trying to piggyback on to the 100th anniversary of the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia in 1917. But I think that the timing will probably be better next May the 5th, Cinco de Mayo in Los Angeles, for the Balkanization of America to begin. I'm not trying to be too prophetic, but that's much more likely in my book. However, one thing we need to keep our eye on is, as one of the political prisoners who contributes to the Roper Report website wrote this last week, North Korea. Now, a lot of people are concerned about an external war with North Korea, potentially leading to World War III. And in this article published on the Roper Report website, it discusses the potentiality for the American military to be either crippled or destroyed by a major external war on the Korean Peninsula, even if it does not go nuclear, even if the Chinese do not get involved. Obviously, those American servicemen and women who are on the Korean Peninsula or in Japan would be the first to be involved. If the North Korean leader does have access to some small, crude, primitive nuclear weapons, then those American servicemen and women's lives may be forfeit. Without them, you can expect mass human wave attacks coming across the parallel into southern Korea, and as happened the first time there's a conflict, the Allied troops, the South Koreans and the Americans, being pushed back into the ocean. Now, if the Chinese get involved, certainly that's a completely different kettle of fish and all bets are off. The war could more quickly go nuclear because the United States would not have another option except to go nuclear in order to defeat the Chinese. I don't know for certain that the Chinese are willing to roll the dice and take that big of a gamble in losing the American consumer market so quickly. I don't know that they're willing to literally go to nuclear brinksmanship to defend the regime in North Korea. They may simply sit behind their borders and their boundaries and let things play out, and then try to mop up the situation and gain influence over whatever successor state rises to power in the ashes of Pyongyang. But if the Chinese do get involved, then certainly it's more likely to go nuclear. And if it goes nuclear, it's certainly more likely to decimate the United States military, at least in the Pacific. It could, according to William White, the writer who contributed the story about Trump destroying the U.S. military on the Roper Report website this last week, as he wrote, it could even lead to a war that would cause a lack of faith in the U.S. military and the destruction of the cream of the crop, even a return to conscription, that is, the draft, and even the overthrow of the government, as it would be so weakened and the military so weakened that a unified resistance movement, an actual revolution, either from the left or the right, or perhaps from both, would not be able to maintain the center. And the establishment could no longer guarantee itself support of the middle class. If that were to happen, I know that's a lot of conjecture. That's a lot of guesses that maybe are too optimistic from our perspective when we talk about regime change at home or the rise of ethnostates through the Balkanization of America. I'm not sure that what we're looking at in the Korean Peninsula over the next few months is going to really be enough to spark a global war of that magnitude. But that is certainly potentially one of the means, one of the crisis trigger scenarios by which the federal government could be weakened, even resulting in a vacuum of power at the federal level, and by which, therefore, the Balkanization of America could happen and the rise of ethnostates, including at least one white ethnostate, could occur. But it's important that we remain cognizant and aware of foreign policy changes and public events that are taking place outside of the Lower 48, because these public events that take place on the Korean Peninsula, certainly in the long run, could affect us and our futures in the white nationalist movement here at home. So, if you have not yet, I encourage you to visit the Roper Report website through whitenationalist.com and to read the article about how Donald Trump could actually destroy the U.S. military, which, as heartbreaking as it is as a patriot to say, would at this point be in the best interest of the white nationalist movement. Now, that article written by a white prisoner is very controversial. However, I think it's something that should be considered, as should all potentialities that we're looking at that might affect our opportunities and our challenges in the near future. Now, as you think about the outcome of the White Lives Matter rally in Shelbyville, Tennessee, as we prepare for perhaps future protests and demonstrations in Memphis or in St. Louis or in other places across the country, and as we look November the 4th at how the left's protest and demonstrations occur across the country in their more liberal cities, then you see the wisdom of the tactics employed in Shelbyville. In Charlottesville, the challenge was to take a pro-white demonstration into what was probably the most liberal and left-wing city in all the South. Now, in contrast, in Shelbyville, Tennessee, a red county in a red state was chosen. Red meaning Republican, conservative, majority white. The result of that, you saw, was evident in the way that the professional and really finely charactered, well-behaved, respectful law enforcement reaction happened, with most of the police contact between the white nationalist and law enforcement being very courteous. And you can read about some of those contacts through that after-action report from Derek Gooden, the Shieldwall Network Tennessee contact, published at the Roper Report website and on the Shieldwall Network website. So it's kind of comical, really, to see the difference that a lot of the law enforcement officers on the local and the county and even the state level in our areas, in majority white areas, are already ostensibly on our side, that nudge, nudge, wink, wink way. And they're going to be the ones who will matter when America goes down and balkanizes, not federal troops, perhaps local National Guard, who will, just like state police, have their own people's interest at heart, their own families, their own communities, not so much the federal governments. So I think that in those upper South regions, like Arkansas and Kentucky, where Pikeville happened, and in Tennessee, where the White Lives Matter demonstration was held, we'll see a much better outcome than we will in other parts of the country. And that's why it's important to continue to shore up our support among the white citizens in those areas. Now, as we work here in Arkansas to shore up the support of Northern Arkansas citizens, where we're still very much majority white and actually becoming more and more majority white every day, we're working now to petition the governor to delay or deny Jacob Goodwin's extradition to Virginia to face those charges out of Charlottesville. It's important that, if you can, you help us out, because as the Ozarks become more and more white, because every day, literally, I see more white people moving from Louisiana and Mississippi, those majority black states, into northern Arkansas, into the Ozarks, making them even more white, there's a real separation between southern Arkansas and northern Arkansas happening. And right smack in the middle is Little Rock, the state capital, where you have to understand that Asa Hutchinson, the governor, rules by fiat. Now, in 1985, Asa Hutchinson, the current governor of Arkansas, had been named as an assistant federal prosecutor by President Ronald Reagan, an ostensible conservative. Asa was a young guy then. One of the first things he did to gain fame was to put on a flak jacket and walk in with FBI agents into the Covenant, the Sword, and the Arm of the Lord compound. Now, the CSA compound was in northwestern Arkansas, close to the Oklahoma border, and it was led by a Christian identity militia leader named James Ellison. The Covenant, the Sword, and the Arm of the Lord was alleged to have taken part in some illegal firearms transfers. So just like with Ruby Ridge, you see what's happening. Just like with the Weavers, James Ellison was targeted based on the corruption of the Second Amendment. What is a permit when you have a concealed carry permit? Now, a permit is when the government takes a right away from you to begin with, and then sells a small part of that right back to you for a fee. Think about that one more time. What is a permit? When you have a fishing permit, or a hunting permit, or a driver's license, or a concealed carry permit, or a silencer permit, or an automatic rifle permit. A permit or a license is when the government takes away a natural right from you by force and then agrees, oh so chivalrously, to sell back a part of that right to you for a fee. What happened in 1985 in Arkansas with the covenant of the sword and the arm of the Lord was that the federal government targeted a Christian Identity militia because of their faith and because of their political beliefs. They were not harming anyone. They never did. But the federal government wanted to take the covenant of the sword and the arm of the Lord down. And so Asa Hutchinson, the current governor of Arkansas, walked in with FBI negotiators, and because of the overwhelming force of hundreds of ATF and FBI agents surrounding the property there, talked James Ellison into surrendering, and eventually, to be frank, talked him into agreeing to testify against his fellow members and fellow Christian Identity adherents. So that's how in 1985, Mr. Asa Hutchinson got his start. So we know exactly who and what he is, and we don't believe that he's gotten any better since then. You know, as I talked about in my open letter to him, I ran for governor myself. I understand the responsibilities of his office, but I met Asa and talked to him in 1985, 10 years later, when he came back to Arkansas in 1995. We met at the Altus Wine Festival. And the circumstances of that meeting is that Asa Hutchinson had been an undersecretary for the Department of Homeland Security in charge of border control. And he had focused primarily on drug interdiction, not so much on immigration, because he is and always was soft on illegal immigration, especially the non-white variety of illegal immigration. He's more likely to promote amnesty than border enforcement. He's a RINO, a Republican in name only, and now Asa Hutchinson and his two nephews in the state legislature basically try to throttle down any true conservatives in the state so they can do business deals and bring in more illegal immigrants. But at that time, in 1995, Asa had just came back from Washington, D.C., and was launching a peremptive run for governor. So I met him at the Altus Wine Festival and told him who I was. And he knew who I was, obviously, because I was very active in the state at that time as well. We were working against the state legislature's efforts to pass a law that would give discounted in-state college tuition to illegal immigrants. And I expressed our dismay at that potentiality and the fact that we've been doing protests and demonstrations and rallies in the state capitol and all over the state to fight that, which actually was being pushed by Mike Huckabee, another cucked, false conservative RINO, who was governor at the time. Well, Asa pretended to agree with me and ask for our support for his campaign for governor, which he subsequently lost that time. And now, he's governor, 22 years later, and we anticipate that he will inevitably sign the extradition papers to send Jacob Goodwin to Virginia. This last week, myself and Jacob Goodwin's parents and dozens of other supporters, through their tireless calling and emailing the governor's office and their republishing of press conference releases and these open letters that I've sent and petitions that we've sent to the governor, got a response. Finally, the governor's lawyer in charge of congressional affairs, spoke to Jacob Goodwin's parents, and then spoke to Jacob Goodwin's lawyer, his criminal defense attorney, Jason Robb of Harrison, Arkansas. At that time, the governor's correctional affairs lawyer made it clear that in all likelihood, Governor Asa Hutchinson will sign the extradition papers to send Jacob Goodwin back to Virginia to face trial in a rigged, corrupt kangaroo court system. And because of that, we're now focusing even more tirelessly than ever on getting Jacob appropriate legal defense set up and in place in Virginia to be there waiting for him when he arrives, and working on the legal strategy that will happen there in Virginia when that seemingly inevitable event does happen. But Jason Robb, Jacob's lawyer here, will continue to be in coordination with the governor's lawyer, and Jacob Goodwin's parents will continue to ask Governor Asa Hutchinson to give them a few minutes of time to express to him why they know that Jacob will not receive a fair trial in Charlottesville, Virginia. And so they're asking him to please place a very legitimate stipulation on the extradition, as happens all the time, that Jacob's venue for his trial will be removed from Charlottesville to a more unbiased and less dramatic venue in Virginia. As we've seen, the two black co-defendants who attacked Jacob and his friends there in Charlottesville have already been released. One of them, who made a flamethrower and used it against whites in Charlottesville, even without bond. At the same time, Jacob's co-defendants on the pro-white side have been repeatedly denied bond and are being held in jail in Charlottesville for however many months it lasts until the trial is held. So we hope that they will not be all tried together. We hope that a change of venue can be gained. And we hope that even if we cannot convince Asa Hutchinson, the governor of Arkansas, to deny or to delay the extradition of Jacob to Charlottesville, we can at least perhaps encourage him to place the stipulation on the extradition that Jacob's trial venue will be removed out of Charlottesville itself. That's in Jacob's best interest. That's in Jacob's family's best interest. And it's certainly in the best interest of justice and fairness. So I encourage you to go to change.org and type in Jacob Goodwin. Or you can just go to google.com and type in Jacob Goodwin petition. And you'll find among the first few links a petition on change.org that you can sign to ask Governor Asa Hutchinson to deny or delay the extradition of Jacob Goodwin to Virginia. It states, along in that petition on change.org, with my open letter to the governor, the many reasons why it's appropriate for the denial or the delay of the extradition. It also states how you can help out financially by going to Funded Justice and donating however much you can to help fund Jacob Goodwin's legal defense. The very generous $1,800 that was contributed by those who attended the White Lives Matter rally in Shelbyville this last weekend will be a great help, as will the just about equal amount that has so far been raised online and given to the family. But more is going to be necessary, as all of you know. Legal defense is expensive, and just like the First Amendment, justice can be bought and sold. While we hope that no one will have their lights turned out or not have their rent paid, everyone digging deep and helping just a little bit can really add up to help make good an effective legal defense for Jacob possible. So please go to change.org and sign the petition to help ask Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson to not sign the extradition papers to send Jacob Goodwin to Virginia until he has secured an agreement by the governor of Virginia to make sure that the change of venue away from Charlottesville will happen for Jacob, and go to fundedjustice.com to make a contribution to Jacob Goodwin's legal defense fund. Now, you can give anonymously there through fundedjustice.com, but if you're uncomfortable with using your credit or your debit card online, then you can send a check or a money order or hidden cash to P.O. Box 1937, Mountain View, Arkansas, 72560. Once again, that is P.O. Box 1937, Mountain View, Arkansas, 72560. Now, if you send a check or a money order, please make them out, as well as the envelope, to Billy Roper, to P.O. Box 1937, Mountain View, Arkansas, 72560, if you prefer not to give through credit or debit card, through fundedjustice.com, to the Jacob Goodwin Legal Defense Fund. This morning, on the Stormfront Radio Show, Jacob Goodwin's mother called in to talk about the White Lives Matter rally and to thank everyone who had helped out so generously by contributing personally at that rally. If you have an opportunity to meet Mr. and Mrs. Goodwin and help them out directly and personally, so if there's no processing fee involved or no delay in getting your check or money order to them, then I encourage you to give directly to them. However, if you're not able to meet them personally, then you can always mail in or through debit or credit card help out Jacob and his parents. The Stormfront Radio program this morning was preempted by a technical glitch, and that error caused the second half of the program to not be aired. However, Mrs. Goodwin will be calling back into the Stormfront Radio program tomorrow, and both of those programs will be available for you to listen to in the Stormfront Radio archives. Each week, of course, I'll continue to bring you updates about Jacob Goodwin's legal defense, as well as his case, and to tell you any new breaking news we have. But most importantly, this week, I can tell you that we have a reporter now who will be carrying Jacob's story and the extradition fight aspect of it in just a couple of days through a local newspaper in Arkansas. This reporter interviewed Jacob and I a few weeks ago when we held a Shield Wall Network defense of a Confederate statue in Searcy, Arkansas, at the White County Courthouse. The Confederate statue there had been threatened with destruction by Anonymous and Antifa, and Jacob and I and other Shield Wall Network members actually gathered there with pro-Confederate locals and defended the monument successfully. The reporter there from the local newspaper talked to Jacob and interviewed him about Charlottesville, but Jacob did not at that time use his real name, and so she could not use that aspect of the article. But now that he has been arrested, we have given her permission to use his interview from that day, and he's actually granted her an email interview since then through the jail email system. So this article will discuss Jacob's experience in Charlottesville, as well as Jacob's experience in being incarcerated and held in Lonoke County Jail. It will then go forward to discuss the fight against Jacob's extradition and for his legal defense fund. So we look forward to the publication of this local newspaper article because we anticipate that it will then break open coverage by other media throughout the state that have been afraid to touch the story so far, once it's been, the taboo's been broken. So look forward on next week's The Roper Report, Billy's Balkanization Podcast, for a report about that media breaking of the Jacob Goodwin extradition fight story here in Arkansas, and hopefully then it getting carried nationally. We'll also talk next week more about the White Lives Matter demonstration in Shelbyville this last weekend, and we encourage you to put aside our differences and to stand together as much as possible for our shared white heritage and history, and most importantly, our shared white future. None of us know exactly what that future will hold for all of us, but we know that we must stand together to make the best of it, and that inevitably, balkanization is going to happen. That will lead to a white ethnostate for the best of us. We encourage you to prepare for that future by getting involved in the Shieldwall Network website. You can learn how to become a person of influence in your community and get involved in real life, boots on the ground, public activism, if you're so inclined. That website is theshieldwallnetwork.wordpress.com. And if you enjoy The Roper Report, Billy's Balkanization Podcast every week here on RadioArian.com, then we encourage you to support our efforts by PayPal through roper_billy@yahoo.com. If you'd like to pose any questions to be answered on next week's The Roper Report, Billy's Balkanization Podcast, then you can also email them to me at roper_billy@yahoo.com. Or if you know how, you can hit me up on Facebook or on Twitter. Until next week, this is Billy Roper for The Roper Report, Billy's Balkanization Podcast, reminding you as always to think racially, act locally, but no matter what, keep it white.
Can you hear the student band? I think they're getting out of hand. Well, you know what happened to those who complain? We've got to stop them seeing light. Let them think it's all right, 'cause the fire acts out to keep them entertained. Well, the wells have not run dry. Do we really need to lie? We'll say it's a national emergency. We'll send a wedding full of clowns, and we'll kick them while they're down. Get the banks control, 'cause they are friends to me. Let's go and find a better place. We'll call it New America. Won't it be a lovely place to be? Material, the mind of New America, the best idea since democracy.
You are listening to Radio Aryan for an alternative to the anti-white system on RadioAryan.com.